Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. A Ugandan opposition parliamentarian plans to take the state house to court over constitutional concerns.
Yesterday, I was alerting Parliament that to give him extra or less is in breach of that law, because the law does not say we should buy him clothes.
A former Minister for Foreign Affairs resigns from the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, or BDP.
I have been subjected to really brutal attacks on social media by a pseudo account that's aligning itself with the presidency and the BDP leadership. And
Zambia's President Hakainde Hichilema calls on the opposition to provide alternative solutions to challenges facing the country.
The call that was made by the Zambian president is a progressive one. Progressive in the sense that development is not an individual project.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Ibrahim Semuju Nganda, a Ugandan opposition parliamentarian, says he plans to take the state house to court for undermining the constitution. Presenting the opposition concerns to parliament, Nganda says the state house's budget sharply contradicts the constitution. His remarks come after parliament approved the government's budget for the year. In it, Nganda says the state house was allocated $94,000 for clothes for the president, a charge that he asserts cost Ugandan taxpayers $269 per day. The president is not a Hollywood movie star requiring a change of clothes every day, he argued, on the floor of parliament. But supporters of the government rejected the criticism, saying it is a publicity stunt aimed at increasing Uganda's public profile. They are calling on the government to ignore him. For more about his plans to seek legal redress about the state house budget, I reach Ugandan parliamentarian Ibrahim Semuju Nganda.
You see, the Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act, 1998, outlines the benefits to the president and his family. Yesterday, I was alerting Parliament that to give him extra or less is in breach of that law, because the law does not say we should buy him clothes. We are buying him clothes of 350 million shilling, Uganda shilling, every year. Even last year, the same amount of money was provided. We're also giving him, we're allowing him to operate two state houses, yet the law says one state house. We are giving him money in his office for ceremonies, 43 billion shilling. Yet the road network in the capital city has broken down and has been allocated only 33 billion shilling. So you allocate 33 billion shilling to repair the road network in the capital city, and then you put 43 billion shilling in the president's office for ceremonies. And then you give him 130 billion shilling for donation, 120 billion shilling for classified. So our concern was that we can't allow the president to swim in a luxury at the expense of the welfare of citizens. Yet the Constitution says the president must work to promote the welfare of citizens.
Are you therefore saying that the presentation of the budget as requested by the State House is a flagrant violation of the Constitution?
It is, because the law on the Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act is a law that was made under the Constitution. It provides the president one residence, he operates two, one in Kampala, another one in Entebbe. It also lists what we should give him. We are now buying him clothes. We are now providing him money for donation. We are now paying electricity bills, a bigger bill, bigger than what one of the biggest factories in Uganda called the roofing that deals in steel. the bill of electricity at the residence of the president is bigger than a bill of bigger factory. The water consumption is bigger than the consumption of water at. That's what I was saying, Parliament. What is it that the president does at the residence that requires this amount of funding?
Why is the opposition unable to stop this? If you said it's a flagrant violation of the Constitution, because some have argued that you could simply take it to court to seek redress from the court to try to stop this. But it appears the opposition will raise concerns but do nothing about it.
Right now we are contemplating, because I told the Parliament, you can put money at the residence of the president guided by the law, not by a list that is submitted by him. And I drew the attention of Parliament to the law. They did not listen. And I told them the earlier parliaments, all of them have been making a mistake. If Parliament refuses, because I have taken Parliament personally more than 3 times to court, I am actually contemplating to go to court to seek a declaration that the amount of money put at the luxury of the president violates the law and therefore violates the Constitution.
The budget has been approved on Thursday. So what's next?
It doesn't matter. I mean, when Parliament amended the Constitution to give MPs 2 more free years in Parliament, I went to court. And Parliament and the court declared that actually to add MPs 2 years was in breach of the Constitution. It does not matter, because budget in Uganda is a law called the Appropriations Act. So what I will be taking to court in the future is the Parliament passing a law that does not conform to the Constitution and does not conform to other regulatory arrangements in the country.
Ibrahim Ssemujju Nganda is a Ugandan opposition parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. The former Minister for Foreign Affairs and a leading member of the ruling party in Parliament has resigned from the Botswana Democratic Party, or BDP. This following a dispute with the top leaders of the group. Unity Dow says she will remain an independent member of the Botswana Parliament as she considers her next line of action. The resignation comes before a scheduled appearance before the BDP's disciplinary committee on May 24. Dow is accused, among others, of defying a party caucus decision and of disagreeing with President Mokhweti Masisi, leader of the governing party. Dow sharply denies the accusation. She asks that there is an attempt to clamp down on her ability to freely express herself as enshrined in the Constitution. Dow tells me that the real dispute with leaders of the party is due to what she says is the competing vision of the future of the country.
I made certain statements in Parliament primarily about my own views about the DIS, or the Directorate of Intelligence Services, stating that I felt that they were going outside their mandate in terms of the work they were doing. That displeased certain people, with the result that from 2020 until now, I have been subjected to really brutal attacks on social media by a pseudo account that's aligning itself with the presidency and the BDP leadership, in of course, and the DIS, you know, constantly saying that I'm against the party, I'm against the president. And all this happened and nobody raised a finger to say, you know, this is wrong, or to defend me or to support me.
Unity, some people are saying that if this is an issue you have, you are a prominent member of the ruling party. Why didn't you deal with the party internal structures to address some of your concerns that you've enumerated?
I mean, look around the world. The leader of any organization, I mean, you can look at any country. It doesn't have to change its laws to be a complete different country. All it has to do is change its leader. You know, for the longest time, I always believed that all you needed was great laws, great rules, and great institutions. But I do believe now that you also need great people, or good people, because at the end of the day, laws, rules, regulations, institutions are nothing if the people who are breathing life into those institutions, into those rules, or who are actually using those rules, you know, are themselves don't believe in the values of the organizations.
You were the face of the government before your resignation internationally. So they would expect you to help change what you didn't like from within. How do you respond to those who are saying so?
It doesn't work like that. I mean, at the end of the day, your dinner table in your own house, the culture of that dinner table is determined by you and your wife, the people who decide the culture of that table. So at the end of the day, the culture of every organization is determined by its CEO. Other people can, you know, suggest. Maybe that's the reason why we only have one president or only one CEO, only one, you know, captain of a ship or only one, you know, captain of a football club. Because at the end of the day, the buck stops with them. At the end of the day, other people can influence, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what it is you're talking about. It is what is the culture of that person at the helm. Look at America, look at Britain, look at Japan, look at China. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. Look at Botswana. The culture of that community is influenced by the person at the top.
Unity, what do you say to those who are saying you have always remained former President Kama loyalist and that you found a way just to leave the ruling party because the former president had a problem with the current president and decided to leave the party? Where is your destination? And does that mean that you are going to work to the defeat of the president and the ruling party, so to speak, in next year's general election?
Okay, I mean, first of all, the suggestion that I'm a Kama loyalist who remained loyal to Kama after he left, you know, you need to talk to him about that because he knows that I'm not the easy person to work with. I'm very, very strong with my views. But I also believe in the rule of law. I believe in the rule, not the rule of people. He was out of power. The current president is in power. He is a man at the helm. And for me, the reasons why we have a problem in this country, you know, I must say, is a continued fight or the continued feud between the president who is in power and the president who has already left, you know, and that this whole feud has been allowed to ferment, to just take our time, to take our money, to take our, you know, resources, to our emotions. It's the one thing that we've been dealing with since 2018. It is ridiculous, you know, and for me, the person who's supposed to set the tone for leadership is the one in power, not one who's left.
What is next for you? Are you joining any political party anytime soon?
I've not made up my mind at all. You know, I want to enjoy my freedom, you know, until I make a decision as to what next. So far, I can still remain in parliament as an independent, and I will remain in parliament as an independent until I make the decision as to what political home I want, you know, to go to. But I'm not in a hurry to make that decision.
Unity Dow is a Botswana parliamentarian and a former foreign minister. She spoke with me from the capital, Gaborone. Zambia's president, Hakainde Hichilema, has called on the opposition to provide alternative solutions to challenges facing the country. At a press conference at the State House in the capital, Lusaka, the president also acknowledged opposition criticism of prevailing economic conditions. Issues the president addressed include law and order, the economy, cost of living, healthcare, agriculture, and mining. Opposition groups reject the president's call for alternative solutions, saying Hichilema is a micromanager who refuses to accept opposition views in spite of his pronouncements otherwise. They also accuse him of using state institutions, including the police and the anti-graft agency, to harass opponents, accusations supporters of the administration sharply reject. For more reaction to the president's press conference, I reach political analyst Alex Ngoma. He is a retired professor of political science at the University of Zambia.
The call that was made by the Zambian president is a progressive one. Progressive in the sense that development is not an individual project. All able-bodied persons should actually be given an opportunity to participate and contribute to the developing of the nation. So for the opposition, I think that there is no wisdom in just offering criticism that is negative. They must be positive. They must be seen to come forward with answers if they think that those in government at the moment are not addressing issues correctly. So the core indeed was a very, very progressive one. Having said that, I think it is also very, very important to put on record the fact that when you talk to the opposition, what they will tell you is what they have been saying all along, that this particular president actually would say one thing but do exactly the opposite. They will tell you that, for example, in his own cabinet, it is like a one-man show. He micromanages all the ministries in this particular country.
Now, Dr. Ngoma, some opposition people that I spoke with are of the view that President Hakainde Hichilema, when he was the opposition leader, never provided alternative solutions when other governments were in power. So why is he asking of something that he did not provide when he was in opposition, they said. Your take?
Yes, indeed. That observation is correct in the eyes of any alert observer. This particular president offered criticism and criticism only. He never provided any alternative solution to anything. He kept all his ideas and thoughts close to his chest. And people actually always said that about him. And so what I'm saying now actually reinforces what I told you earlier, that there appears to be no room for the opposition really to go forward and over and volunteer checks and balances in line with development.
One of the opposition leaders, Kelvin, or KBF as they call him, said enough of the rhetoric, and that the president is always making promises, but rarely keep those promises. His press conference that he held, KBF, in his words, is it just a publicity stunt just to appear to be doing something, but just having a one-man show with nothing to show for it?
Yes, indeed. I'm glad that you have made reference specifically to the views of KBF. You see, the problem is that according to the opposition, this president would say something very nice, but in reality, he would do exactly the opposite. He has invited the opposition to step forward and volunteer alternative solutions to the challenges that his country has. But in reality, there will be no room for the opposition to do that. In fact, some opposition political leaders have actually said that, you know, when they try to gain access to this president, they are denied that access. So how do they provide alternative solutions? So yes, indeed, it's a general feeling in the nation that there's too much rhetoric on the part of the president.
What do you think the president can do? Because a lot of promises were made. Has he kept those promises? Some people say he has enough time until 2026 when the next elections come around. He has enough time to correct or keep some of those promises. But what do you think is the best way forward for President Hakainde Hichilema?
You see, there is this feeling in the nation that this president actually promises big things, but it delivers very, very little. So the way forward for this particular president is to listen to what the people are saying, to gauge the mood in the nation and understand that there is a lot of dissatisfaction all over the place. And from there, begin to look at the promises that he made while in the opposition, one by one. And then after that, he should begin to actually attend to those that he can attend to. The others that he can't fulfill, he should be open enough and honest enough to tell the people of Zambia that he is unable for certain reasons. That, I think, would be human enough to do. When you can't fulfill what you promised, acknowledge that you've got challenges and therefore you can't do that. And people will understand. That is my advice to our dear president.
Alex Ngoma is a retired professor of political science at the University of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
In Nigeria, the national convener and chairman of the Peter Obi movement has sharply denied divisions within the rank and file of the opposition Labour Party. Some supporters of the former Anambra State governor and presidential candidate of the Labour Party say the allegations are demoralizing and embarrassing. Eliashib Imme James also claims the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, snatched away Obi's mandate when it declared Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu winner of the February 25 presidential election. His remarks come after local media reports of a clash by factions of the Labour Party at the ongoing presidential election petition court. This as the court hears Obi's challenge of the outcome of the presidential vote. For the latest development in the Labour Party and the Peter Obi movement, I reach Eliashib Imme James.
There are no factions in Labour Party. He's a dissident former deputy chairman, South. He was not elected. He was appointed by Abure. And we warned Abure at onset that some of these people that he was appointing were mercantile politicians who all in their life, they used election period to make money. But he wasn't listening to anybody. He just wanted an organization. And because we are Peter Obi support group members and not Labour Party members, he didn't quite listen to us. And it was people like Lamidi Apapa that was encouraging him not to deal with support groups. This election for Peter Obi was won square, but the powers that be tried to circumvent it, and we are not going to accept it. We fight legally to the Supreme Court.
Some people are suggesting that this apparent disunity within the party is demoralizing to supporters of Mr. Peter Obi, even as he challenges the outcome of the February 25th presidential election at the tribunal. What do you say to that?
The supporters of Peter Obi are not Labour Party members. We voted for Labour Party because our principal, Peter Obi, was on their ballot. Instead of dissuading us, fire the energy in us to ensure that that mandate is revalidated. Listen and listen carefully to me. We do not make threats. I am not particularly a young man. I have seen life, okay? And I am the convener and the national chairman of Peter Obi movement. And I can tell you point blank, when they said that we had no structure, by the time they were saying we had no structure, my group already had structures in the 36 states of the Federation, including the FCT Abuja. And we had structure from state to local government to world. So it cannot dissuade us. Our members and Peter Obi movement, PON, is just one out of 1,000 plus Peter Obi supporters. So how is it going to dissuade us?
What do you think are the prospects of the legal challenge in court at the moment? Because a lot of lawyers are saying that Peter Obi coming third, as announced by INEC, there's no legal pathway for him being successful at the tribunal. Your reaction?
With what we have on ground, visible evidence, that forensic evidence, forensic investigation will attest to proof that that Peter Obi actually won the election. How do you account the fact that in Taraba we won and it's a PDP that was declared? How do you count that in Benue we won, it was APC that was declared? How do you count the cost that in River State the governor practically went out violent against the people? And even at that, we still won the election in River State. And they messed up the result sheet. We are in court. We have asked that they allow Nigerians and the world to watch the proceedings live. Why are they refusing to do that? Because we want the world to hear us and hear them. When they hear us and they hear them, we will now know whether we are sincere or not. So Peter Obi, Have you not won that? If we truly came third, why is it that the APC and his team are always attacking the third position. They do not attack PDP because they know what they did. And they know that we are ready with facts to confront them in court. So that story that we kept taught, that was the narrative they wanted to paint. Unfortunately, the obedient are peopled by very young people, techie young people who put up technology at our disposal. And we got information that had never been gotten before. This court case will shake the whole of the world. Trust me.
Leadership Imme James is the national convener and chairman of the Peter Obi Movement. He spoke with me from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Women entrepreneurs from Africa and the diaspora have reflected on what they've gained through a program created by the Center for Global Enterprise based in New York. They came to Nairobi to hear from experts and each other on how to improve and grow their businesses. US Africa correspondent Mariama Diallo spoke to a few of them and has the story.
After 3 years of meeting virtually, the African Women Entrepreneurship Cooperative Group, or AWEC, convened in Nairobi at its first in-person meeting since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. AWEC is a year-long program created through the Center for Global Enterprise, a nonprofit research institute based in New York. The program has been in place for 5 years now, CGE Director Christopher Kane told VOA.
It was designed to help women business owners in Africa build resilient businesses. And we do that through focusing in on their management skills and capacity, as well as all the things that a business leader needs to accomplish.
Don Linus, the managing director of AWEC, told VOA about 200 women are selected each year from approximately 3,000 applicants. She said they focus on experimental learning.
Every single woman here is an entrepreneur. They're running their own business. And during the course of their program, they use their business as a case study. So they learn about a topic, say digital marketing, and then they go and they rewrite their digital marketing strategy for their business the next day. We'll go over financial management, and they'll go over and they'll redo their balance sheet.
Elizabeth Njorogi of Lee's Njorogi Collection says she's been in business for 20 years, but was hardly making any money.
Majority of us entrepreneurs are in business because we are not making money. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what we are doing, but we keep on going just one day at a time and hoping things will be well. But when you're doing business, structures and systems in your business such that if any time you deviate from your destination, it's very easy for you to go back and realize I went wrong here, go back and correct it.
Uzoa Maka Igweke, managing director of Loom Craft Chocolate, a Nigerian cocoa bean processing and chocolate making company based in Abuja, said AWEC has helped her by improving her sales pitch and focusing on the customer.
Going through that 12-month program, the difference is clear between when we started and when we ended. By now, right when we started, basically, we are maybe selling to stores mostly in Abuja, but now we are in almost 100 stores nationwide.
Other participants included U.S. Ambassador to Kenya Meg Whitman. As a former CEO of eBay and Hewlett Packard, Whitman graduated from Princeton and Harvard universities with only 10% of her classes being women. But things have improved, she told the group.
So this has been an enormous transition, but what I will tell you after from having worked in business for the last, you know, almost now 45 years, it's harder for women. It just is. And it's easier today than it was when I graduated from school, but it's still hard. But, you know, if I think sometimes we can be smarter and we can work harder and we can have that perseverance that is necessary as an entrepreneur.
Harriet Chigai, Kenya's presidential advisor on women's rights, was the keynote speaker. She told VOA, no matter what difficulties they encounter, women entrepreneurs should keep going.
The one key thing I would wish to take away is financial literacy. Every woman needs to be able to be trained, capacity built, to be able to manage their finances.
While many women earn money, it's important to also know how to make use of that money, she said. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Amnesty International and Kenya's National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission have released a joint report saying the Kakuma refugee camp is not safe for nearly 1,000 members of the LGBTQ community. The report says they face extreme abuse. From UA, James Shimanyula has more from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The Kakuma camp, north of Nairobi, is home to more than 200,000 refugees, including nearly 1,000 people who identify as LGBTQ+. Amnesty International says lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex refugees in Kakuma routinely suffer serious hate crimes, including rape. It released a new report at an event in Nairobi on Friday. Speaking from an undisclosed location, one LGBTQ+ Ugandan, who preferred to be called Alex Katongole, spoke about his experience in Kakuma.
I got several attacks there, and we were getting very, very, very serious attacks. Lesbians were being raped. Transgenders were sexually harassed.
Irungu Houghton, Amnesty International's executive director in Kenya, says authorities ignore such human rights violations.
Simple request we are making of the government of Kenya, the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights and Development Partners, is that they provide services and they provide protection for all refugees. The report documents hate crimes, discrimination, the failure to register on time and to provide services for LGBT.
Same-sex relations are illegal in 32 of African countries where they are punishable by law. In Kenya, same-sex acts are punishable by up to 14 years in prison. James Shimanyula reporting for VOA News in Nairobi.
Has social media improved your life, or is it more of a distraction? We'd love to hear from you. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, plus one, 202-258-3076. Can't wait to hear from you.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Bye. girls don't be money. Who you don't like? Now only me, my life. See how sweet they like beans and rice. I will never leave your side. I will never ever go. I dedicate my life to you, my guy. Even if the road is rough, I don't mind.
My name is Divine Tembeng Mba from Pretoria in South Africa, and you are listening to Nightline Africa from the Voice of America with Peter Clote. Stay tuned and don't change that dial.
DJ Stavo, and you tuned in to Nightline Africa on Voice of America, and you've just heard my brand new single titled Mtandazo. I hope you enjoyed.
I miss you, no. I know that you know. Shoot, baby, shoot, baby, shoot, baby. Tell your friends about VOA Africa, music, sports, and news.
like Jangoloba. Now you crash your Ferrari for Lekki Bona. Now see nothing remain, could have been all over. My feelings today swing like Jangoloba. Feelings today swing like Timbani Kachuru.
Music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Holbey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if the vulture fails to hover at the end of a sacrifice, then you know that something happened in the land of spirits. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.